Our special guest at this time, as every Tuesday, from Real Clear Politics, he's their White House correspondent, Philip Wegman. Philip, hey, good afternoon to you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Pat.
So what is the general take? I mean, I have seen there at the G7, I've seen some of the, call it embarrassing videos of President Biden calling countries by different names, not finishing sentences, starting to being asked just kind of a mundane question by a reporter, and Jill grabs his hand and leads him out of the courtyard and says, "Come on, Joe." And then there was one time, day before yesterday, when some of the other participants in the G7 actually snickered at him at his inability to keep up. Would we have been better off just to have kept him home?
Well, I think that President Biden wanted to go more than anything because a big part of his campaign was that the United States was going to regain its leadership role on the world stage. And let's face it, Joe Biden enjoys these types of world stage summits. I mean, he knew Andrea Merkel from his time in the Biden administration. He likes these glamorous sort of photo opportunities. And he came there with an agenda. Whether or not the other G7 countries are going to, you know, get on board with his calls for setting up more guardrails on China, you know, that remains to be seen. And that's kind of a product of what these summits are like. You know, the press is kept decently far away. It's really choreographed. And so we're left to sort of speculate about what actually happened from sort of those little interactions that, you know, photographers and cameraman can spot from, you know, 50, 100 yards off.
Well, yeah, and I'm wondering, too, when he says he likes going to these things, these are his people. Some of the people think that he's their people, too. Did you see where the French president made the statement that they're glad Joe is here because he's one of them? I don't know that being linked that we're the same kind of leader as Macron, I don't know that that's a great monstrous, check in your box there.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is either. But that really does lay bare a key difference between the two administrations, between the two worldviews when it comes to foreign policy. You had the Trump-era Republicans who really did believe in this sort of America First policy on the world stage. And their idea was, look, you know, we're going to stick with our allies where we can. But our goal, first and foremost, is to do what's best for the country. The Biden administration, they certainly want to do what's best for the country, but they see this less as the United States is going to be America first, as instead the United States is going to be working closely with our partners, because we're not just, you know, one country. Instead, we're part of a global community. And I think that also has sort of echoes from what we saw from, you know, the Obama administration, which is, you know, that president, he saw himself, you know, as both you know, president of the United States, but also as sort of a global citizen. And it's clear from what we've seen thus far, you know, European leaders, they like Biden. They think that he has a similar sort of global mindset. And, you know, they're happy to work with him, even though they're not going to go as far as he wants on confronting China and Russia.
No, absolutely not. In fact, you mentioned Russia. Tell us your particular take. Tomorrow, he's in Switzerland now. Tomorrow, he sits across from Vladimir Putin. Putin, who is he was a ruthless member of the KGB, okay? There's all kinds of blood all over the hands of Vladimir Putin. He tries to paint himself as this glorious statesman now. But Vladimir, when he meets with Trump tomorrow, doesn't he need kind of to outpace Biden and to show that he's head and shoulders above Biden when they come together on the international stage? Because doesn't it hurt him if he doesn't do that?
I think that look, Putin has a cult of personality in Russia because he is someone who came to power, obviously, through sort of dubious circumstances, like
right.
You mentioned a second ago. But also, you know, he has said that the fall of the Soviet Union is the greatest geopolitical disaster in his mind, and he wants to restore Russia to its formerly, you know, grand place in world history. That type of behavior and that type of mindset doesn't lead to, you know, protecting human rights. It doesn't lead to a particularly kind sort of you know, governing. But what it does require is, it does require Putin to be this sort of bare-chested machismo guy who's going to go out there and, you know, be the toughest guy on the block. And so, look, Biden was invited, or excuse me, Putin was invited. He's coming to this bilateral, you know, sit down. And what does he have to lose? Not much. What does he have to win? Not much either. Instead, this could just be sort of a good opportunity for him to, you know, play to the cheap seats in Russia and say, look, I was, you know, more of a Clint Eastwood guy than, you know, the American cowboy.
Okay, so, you know, he doesn't have much to gain or to lose. Is it possible that even if Biden ends up way on the short side of the stick, it won't become really known because the press are not going to really hold him accountable for that? I mean, isn't it really that the press will basically give Biden all kinds of passes? Because, I mean, right now, they're and when I say press, forgive me, I don't mean Real Clear Politics, but you know who I mean. You know, the main people, they're basically lapdogs for the administration now, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, look, the press is grading on a curve. You saw a correspondent from PBS, who your tax dollars fund, basically ask the national security advisor what Biden was going to do to improve relationships with world leaders after Trump had ruined everything. I mean, if that's not a biased question, I don't know what is. But, you know, I think we will see, you know, some of their interactions. They're not going to have a press conference together. They're going to hold separate press conferences, which is a break, you know, from previous tradition. But we already know. We already know a lot about the way that Joe Biden wants to handle Russia. He likes to go on TV in this country and say that Putin is a killer. He likes to talk about how Putin and Russia are a threat and complain about some of these ransomware attacks that have been coming out of Russia. But when the rubber meets the road, he did not stop the Russian pipeline from being constructed. It was 90% complete, and he waived sanctions on the individuals who were involved. So he does not have an ace up his sleeve that we know of going into these meetings, because he potentially sort of gave the game away and let that pipeline continue construction.
Well, and that was another bugaboo that could have really cost Biden here had the press done their job and been on him with the natural questions. Okay, so their pipeline's okay and ours wasn't? That's cost us thousands of jobs, and now we're blowing our cost of gas up close to and over the $3 mark. But of course, they're not going to ask him that. One last thing. In a segment in the last hour, I had Todd Bensman on with me, and Todd is out of Texas, and he is a senior fellow for an immigration organization out of Texas. And he said in his recent article, if and when Vice President Kamala Harris does visit the border, don't expect her to go where its collapse can be seen. His position was, she won't go where you can see a lot of chaos and a lot of people coming over. She won't go where there is no chaos, because it's a place where the wall has been completed. So what is left for her, does she go where, you know, she can't go where the wall's been completed. She can't go where it's real bad. So is she going to go to a place that, like when our congressmen and senators go down, where they go, is she not going there because she would have to show too much of what she doesn't want to show? Is this going to be just really a physical exercise about nothing?
You know, the political itinerary that these politicians take when they go to the border is really interesting. When Republican senators went down there a couple weeks ago, they went to an area on the Rio Grande where there was no wall, where there were a number of migrants who were passing. I don't know if you remember this, but Senator Ted Cruz mentioned how how some of the coyotes were mocking them. And so Republicans, to make their argument, they go to the worst place possible. And they say, look at, you know, all of these people who are crossing into our country. And that buttresses their case. When then-Senator Harris went to the border during the migrant crisis, she went to an area where there was child separation, and she wanted to highlight that. I think that eventually, as vice president, when she does arrive, her team is going to be very careful about the area that they pick. They're not going to want to highlight how the border is, in fact, not closed. And so they'll try and find a more calm place. But, you know, the damage has been done. I mean, the vice president has not had a good answer as to why she has not gone to the border. And her responses, even when questioned by Lester Holt, who was pretty tame, were not, you know, she didn't pass with flying colors there. I don't think that, you know, she won a lot of accolades. So, I think it's a no-win scenario. If you're just looking at this in terms of politics, and, you know, not the larger issue, which is that, you know, our border is very much still open. And frankly, a lot of the people who are making that journey, they're putting themselves at really great risk to do so.
Yeah. Well, listen, I commend to you for your approval to check out the article by Todd Benzman that came out today about her going to the border. It was some really interesting takes there. If he tries really, really hard, he'll be as good as Philip Wegman someday from Real Clear Politics. But by the way, it has been approved. They are going to have the Hold Their Feet to the Fire event, the FAIR group, Federation for American Immigration Reform, whatever the Wednesday, Thursday is on the last week of September. So I will be in D.C. So you need to come and be on my program, and we'll actually do it there. It'll be hard for you and I to stay at 15 minutes if we're sitting there alive. But what we'll do is I'll have you be my last guest of the day, and then I'll take you around the corner to the Dubliner restaurant, and we'll have the greatest chicken pot pie on the planet there. So that's my offer to you. Does that work?
I've been hearing about this chicken pot pie for some time, so it better live up to...
is amazing. I mean, they should be paying me royalties for advertising for them. I mean, it is unbelievable stuff. Philip, thanks so much for your time today, sir. I appreciate you.
Hey, thank you, Pat.
Podcasts by Federated Media.